Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, contributing editor and film critic for Las Vegas Weekly. And joining me this week is T.R. Witcher, associate editor of Las Vegas Weekly. Thank you for being here.
Good to be back.
Always a pleasure to have you. And we are here to talk about Star Trek.
Live long and prosper.
Yeah, exactly. So this is pretty much the biggest and virtually only thing going on this week. The new Star Trek movie from J.J. Abrams, TV producer, writer, extraordinaire, responsible partly at least for Alias and Fringe and Lost, also directed the third Mission Impossible movie. And I like this movie a lot. I think I would classify my level of Star Trek fandom as moderate. I think maybe you'd probably be around the same.
Yeah, that's fair. Moderate, yeah.
But I was skeptical, and I thought the whole idea of going back and retelling the origins and early days of the original cast was a little, I don't know. I didn't think that was necessarily the best approach for them to take. But I think given that they took that approach, I think they did pretty much the best job that you could hope for here. They nod to continuity by having the original Spock played by Leonard Nimoy again.
Right.
He comes back in time, pursued by these evil Romulans led by Eric Bana, and creates this alternate timeline so that everything that's come before, that all the Star Trek fans are, that's beloved and that everyone is familiar with, is still there, but we're
right.
able to go off in this new direction.
Right.
And I thought that was a nice way to tie up this old continuity and not invalidate it while still not tying their hands in having to do everything that has already been done. So,
well, you definitely get the feeling there's some new energy in the franchise now.
Yeah.
That this is a very dynamic and exciting movie and very colorful. From a visual standpoint, you know, I kind of liken this movie to sort of like the perfect 3.5-minute pop song.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily even if it's by your favorite band. But once it gets going, it's very pop culture, summer blockbuster friendly.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
it's very squarely in that vein.
Yes,
I mean,
it
doesn't have sort of the higher ambitions of a Dark Knight or a Lord of the Rings or what have you.
True.
But within that sort of spectrum, it pops very effectively.
Yeah, I don't think that's a pejorative necessarily to speak about it in those summer blockbuster terms. I mean, I like this movie a lot. I thought it was extremely entertaining. And I'm not a huge fan of The Dark Knight, so I would say I liked it more. But, I mean, I think it really delivers everything that you hope for in a summer blockbuster kind of movie. I mean, it's not just a bunch of random explosions. It's not a Michael Bay movie. It does have, I mean, it doesn't have the level of substance or ambition of like The Dark Knight or even some other Star Trek stuff. And Star Trek is very well known for taking on social issues and philosophical issues and things like that. And that really doesn't come into play here.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really think that's a huge problem. I think this movie is so entertaining, and it does capture the spirit of Star Trek, I think. It maybe doesn't do everything that every other Star Trek story, movie, TV series, whatever has done, but it captures the optimism, the
right.
excitement about the future, and the sort of diversity and the potential for all sorts of adventure that I think is the hallmark of especially that first Star Trek series, which of course is really what they're basing this whole thing on.
Well, and to its credit, I mean, beneath all the whiz-bang, I mean, there's a lot of whiz-bang, and it looks like $1 million.
Oh, several hundred million bucks, I think.
I mean, visual effects-wise, this is extremely impressive, and I don't say that lightly, and I've seen, as you have, lots and lots of special effects movies, and, you go to a Wolverine, and they're mediocre.
Yeah.
You go to other movies, and they're good, they get the job done. But they don't leave a lasting impression. But, I mean, visually, this movie was really, really exciting. But what it does is that, ultimately makes it work for me is that it gets the dynamics of the central characters.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, Spock. I mean, all the performances. I mean, Chris Pine, I didn't know anything about.
Yeah.
I thought he did a fine job. Urban.
I liked him a lot as McCoy, was
brilliant.
Yes,
and
yes.
Zach Quinto, I thought, made a very good Spock.
Yeah.
And the feeling of the, you know, the camaraderie between the characters, that sense that, okay, I can buy that these folks will become close and will become friends and will sort of become the characters,
the people that, we know.
That I know and remember, I thought, was hit about as well as it could have been.
Yeah.
So that's really gives the movie a lot of its sort of humanity.
Yeah, I know. I completely agree. I thought the cast was, they were really well cast. And one other thing I liked about this movie, and which I think has been a flaw of past Star Trek movies, is that it doesn't try to give every character their own storyline. I mean, this movie is about Kirk and Spock and sort of McCoy to a lesser degree.
Really about Kirk and Spock.
Really, I mean, about
McCoy
Kirk and Spock,
is just sort of...
He's more of a background, yeah.
Right.
And Uhura has actually quite a large role here. But all of those supporting lesser characters, they're there to support. It's not like, well, we also have to figure out what is Sulu's origin story or whatever. I mean, Sulu does what Sulu does. He pilots a ship and he has one great showcase where he gets to kick some ass and he uses off his quote unquote fencing skills, which seem more like karate skills, but whatever they are. You know, he gets his moment and Chekhov gets his little moment where he saves the day by figuring out some sort of equation or something that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. And Scotty, who doesn't show up until way late in the movie, but he gets a showcase as well. And so, but I like that this movie is, it knows what it's about. It's not trying to be about everything, which I think especially some of the Next Generation movies, it was like, all right, we got to have a little storyline for Worf and we got to have a little storyline for Data and a little storyline for Geordi. And that I think bogs down a movie, which is not a TV series and can't address all those things. So I like that they did that here.
Right. No, I think, you know, everybody got their little grace note.
Yeah.
You know, they got their one little moment to shine. But that dynamic with Kirk and Spock and, you know, Kirk is a sort of cocky, you know, young troublemaker who has to sort of grow up and become a man and, you know, put his life to service, you know, a cause that's greater than his own, you know, satisfaction. And Spock kind of trying to wrestle with his, you know, his two halves. I mean, what's fun about the movie is that he is half and half.
Right.
And we tend to think of him
just as a Vulcan.
As a Vulcan,
yeah.
You know, entirely. And so, you know, this has some fun kind of playing with that line. We're still totally allowing him to be, you know, the Spock that we know and love.
Right.
So all of that, you know, works really well. I mean, I think maybe the most complimentary thing I can say is that, like, Star Trek is, like, really cool.
Yeah.
And, like, the idea of, you know, in a subsequent movie, I mean, I think, you know, it feels like it's wide open for them to move in some interesting directions and to take some chances or to do, you know, whatever.
Right.
But I'll be really interested to see what they do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's, I mean, that's high praise for a franchise that's, you know, been going on for a long time and has been more misses than hits.
Yeah, I think at least movie-wise, you're absolutely right. It has been. And that's what I think one of the things I always loved about Star Trek is that there is that limitless potential in that they're always going to boldly go somewhere new and you never know. And that was one of my worries, I think, about this movie is that, like, oh, they're, you know, not so boldly going back to what we've already seen, but they do a good job of, you know, plot-wise, sure, with the time travel and all that, but just in the sensibility also of getting across that idea of, like, no, we are striking out here in new territory, even though there's a lot of familiar stuff. And and I liked that a lot. I think as a fan, I still hope for something, whether it's an unrelated movie or a TV series or however they decide to reinvigorate this franchise further that takes place in that old continuity, but in the future of it with new characters, which is – that's something that's always been exciting to me about Star Trek too, is that because ever since Next Generation, it's been like, let's introduce you to a bunch of new people. It's not just Kirk 2.0. It's right. all sorts of new people. And that's one thing we don't get here. Mm-hmm. And I hope still that we will get that eventually.
Right.
But yeah, I completely agree that this makes me excited to see what happens next. And it makes me feel like there is life here, mm-hmm. which at the end of like Enterprise, which was the last Star Trek right. thing that happened, you really felt like the life had completely gone out of it.
Right. Or, you know, I read somewhere where somebody was complaining about the movies, the recent movies, as, you know, sort of being limited in their color palette. I mean, yeah. not only literally, but kind of more, you know, kind of metaphorically, a lot yeah. of murky grays and, you know, kind of dark, gloomy colors. And this movie is just like...
It pops.
Bright yes. and, you know, not in a sort of Speed Racer kind of too bright, too, yeah. too much, but in a very colorful, exciting, like, wow, that's really cool.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I wish I were there. I mean, that kind of... You know, that kind of feeling. So, yeah, sort of, you know, I was thinking about this. You know, Star Trek and Iron Man is sort of like, I don't know, yeah. the return is something right. a little bit more
bright and optimistic sunny and yeah, you know, and positive.
But still kind of pop culturally savvy enough yeah. to yeah. kind of, you know how to wink at the audience, know how to sort of, you know, make the jokes work and little sly references to this and that. Right, so we right. still feel like we're, you know, grounded in something we can, you know, we can get behind. But it's worked great in Iron Man and worked great here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like Iron Man, but I think I like this even more. I really enjoyed this film. So, yeah, I mean, I gave it 4 stars in my review, and I think that is some high praise from me, and I imagine you'd give it a pretty high rating as well.
Yeah, thereabouts, yeah.
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 So one other thing that we did in the paper this week was talk about looking to the past, because a big thing about Star Trek is, of course, its long history, and again, like I've said several times, is one of the things that I like a lot about it, that it builds this whole large, rich world that's far beyond just that original cast of 7 mm-hmm. crew members or whatever. And we talked about some of our favorite moments. So if you had to pick one favorite Star Trek thing, whether it's a TV series or an episode or a movie, or what would you say is the best, highest moment of Star Trek?
Can I give 2?
Sure, why not? We just made this rule up at right now, so
well,
go ahead.
One, and having watched some of this old stuff on YouTube to kind of help put together this list,
yeah.
one certainly, you know, Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan,
right, right.
you know, William Shatner and Ricardo Montalban. I mean, and we think of them as just, we think of Shatner as like the ultimate, you know, sort of ham actor. But he's really quite good as a actor in this movie. And yeah. I think Montalban is just like one of the great sort of movie villains,
yeah.
really. And watching these two very evenly matched opponents kind of, you know, hurl their ships at each other, sort of hurl these great lines of dialogue at each other. I mean, it's very smart. It's very pulpy. I mean, it's just a perfect sort of encounter, and really helps make that movie. I mean, that's not the only thing that makes that movie
right.
great, but it, you know, really, you know, helps make that movie such a great Star Trek film.
Yeah,
I mean, it's still
that really is like the gold
one
standard.
That everybody yeah. looks back on fondly. I mean, right. even when I watch it now, and I can kind of chuckle at some of the special effects. You know, the characters and the story, I'm still instantly, mm-hmm. instantly into. And
yeah.
I think that's a great one. And also, we didn't mention this on our list, I don't think. And I know this is kind of maybe an obvious answer. I mean, Khan is an obvious answer too. But the Borg episode, you know, where, you know, originally, if I may.
Please.
So, you know, I think it's in season 2, right, where we're
talking about Next Generation.
Right, Next Generation.
Yes.
So this is like late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, you know, Q shows up and, you know, he tells Picard, well, there's a whole lot of stuff out there humankind just isn't ready for. And Picard's very confident, arrogant. He's like,
sure.
Come on, we're up for everything. And Q whisks them off to the distant part of the galaxy, and they first encounter the Borg. And at the end of the episode, it's clear that, you know, as the Borg are chasing the Enterprise and are about to catch them, and Picard realizes we're totally in over our heads, and he sort of has to beg Q. He's like, okay, you made your point. You're right. I beg you for help. And it's a great bit of sort of foreshadowing. And then we don't – then they kind of disappear for a season.
Yeah.
And then they come back, and it's a two-part episode, and it was a cliffhanger at the end of the third season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember just you know, as a great cliffhanger, the idea of – and this was back in the day when you really had to wait 4 months or 3 months, and there was no internet. You didn't really – you didn't know what was going to happen.
Sure, right.
And they leave you on this great cliffhanger where Picard's been captured by the Borg and turned into a Borg, and it just – you can't think of – a way out. You know, it just seems there's no way that they're going to be able to solve this. And there's this great sort of sub story where Riker, the second in command, they keep offering him his own ship and he keeps saying no. And he's got this young hotshot, you know, analyst who's gunning for his position. And Riker sort of, I mean, so there's this great sort of, you know, kind of little sub story going. That's, I won't spoil how they defeat the Borg at the end of the second episode, but
right.
It's that was a real highlight for me, and a real sense that wow, this is like a great TV show.
Yeah.
This isn't just like another just
Saturday
something
afternoon.
That they came together. This
yeah.
is like they're really, you know, putting a lot of work into it. So maybe
yeah.
those two for me.
Yeah, no, I love that the Borg stuff, especially. I mean, the Borg are, I think, a really impressive, one of the greatest creations, I think, in the history of Star Trek. And that, when they capture Picard, is really wonderful. And it gives you that sense of vulnerability to him, which I think is something that Kirk never really had.
Right.
And that Patrick Stewart really brought to that performance as Picard, where he might not know everything. And he doesn't, you know, his confidence is a different kind of confidence than Kirk's. And I love First Contact. The Next Generation was the second Next Generation film, which is another thing that deals with the Borg. And I think was probably the last one that, like this new movie, understood how to make a movie out of Star Trek, where it felt big and important and it was action-oriented, not certainly as action-oriented as this new film, but
right.
far more so, I think, than any of the other Next Generation movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it really felt like things were going down, like
right.
people were in danger, the universe might not last, all that
right.
kind of stuff,
right.
Which it doesn't always come across.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, I mean, it's been a long time since I saw that movie, but that I remember thinking, wow, this is a serious Star Trek movie. And I came into it, the franchise, with Next Generation, as I think you did as well. And so the original series movies don't have that as much resonance for me, I think, as the Next Generation movies, were these characters that I first discovered when I was 12 years old
right.
or whatever it was. And I also love Deep Space Nine, which I think past Next Generation people, especially casual fans or people who aren't fans, kind of forget about the stuff that's come after that. And I think with good reason, maybe, when it comes to Voyager and to Enterprise, or at least to a lot of what happened in those series. But Deep Space Nine, I thought, was... It took a while to get to where it was going, I think, but once it hit its stride, it was really complex about the politics of all these, because it takes place on the space station, and so it's not the crew seeking out new life and new civilizations. It's all of these lives and civilizations kind of commingling in one place and having to get a balance to how they interact. And I thought it really, despite the fact that they were stuck in one place, which was often criticized as a problem for the show,
right.
and eventually they gave them a ship so they could go off and explore some stuff occasionally.
Right.
But I thought it did a really good job of exploring that dynamic of diplomacy and war and things that an organization like the Federation, which basically represents the UN, would actually have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who worked on that show, I mean, one of whom is Ronald Moore, who went on to do the Battlestar Galactica remake, which, of course, is highly acclaimed and I think deals with a lot of similar stuff. I'm trying to think. Ira Stephen Baer, I think, also went on and worked on the 4400, which is super cheesy, but is an entertaining show.
Right.
And I think Deep Space Nine is really underrated, and it's a shame that I don't think those characters will ever get a movie, because at this point they've certainly moved on. I mean, maybe we'll see Worf somewhere sometime, but that's about it. But I love Deep Space Nine, and I think that's I mean, that's not where most people would start, I think. But if you're curious about Star Trek, I think that's one to keep in mind, maybe, not to dismiss. So, I mean, there's a ton. That's a great thing. Again, I think there's so much. There's so many TV episodes, and there's novels, and there's comic books, and there's so many ways to, like, get into it, which is just – and there will be a new Star Trek experience here in Las Vegas.
Right.
And I think one of my favorite things about Star Trek in that experience – and this is a super geeky thing, but they used to have the quote-unquote Museum of the Future at the Star Trek experience. And you could see all of these little bits and pieces that different people had come up with for different TV series and different movies that they all fit together in some way and created this thing that was larger than any of those individual pieces.
Right.
And that is what I really like about Star Trek and what I hope they don't lose with this sort of reboot here.
Well, you know, it's funny. There's a lot of talk these days about you know, the Amazon Kindle, the ebook reader, and is Apple going to come out with a tablet computer and whatnot? And I'm watching one of these old episodes of Next Generation, and who knows, there may be something out of the original series even farther back, but this is like 20 years ago, and Picard's like casually walking around with the tablet PC, and I'm like, that's, you know, so this kind of, you know, this vision of the future and the idea that there are some things you see and you just think, yeah, that's the future. That's where we're headed, and maybe that's pretty cool.
Right.
And it's, you know, you see things like that and you're like, man, I'm waiting for that. Where is that?
Where
and
is
you feel
my
like it's almost here. You know, in some cases it is here.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
Yeah, it is. And that's, I mean, the vision of the future that Star Trek has is a future where, despite the dangers of evil time traveling Romulans or whatever, things are good. People are exploring. Technology has improved our lives. We are learning
because
new
things. We're basically good. We've sort of overcome all of the kind of, you know, petty stuff, squabbling and fighting and, you know, whatnot that hinders us now, you know, drags us down. That we've actually somehow, you know, we've made the right decision somewhere between now and when the show takes place.
Yeah.
And we've set ourselves on you know, an upward trajectory.
Yeah.
And that's fun. I mean, that gives you some,
it's
you
a
know,
nice
some inspiration and some hope. And it just makes for a fun way to, you know, spend an hour watching cool television.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or 2 hours watching cool movie.
A movie, yeah. It definitely, I mean, as much as I like dystopian sci-fi, there's really something to be said for that. So
after 5 successful new Star Trek movies, we'll be ready for some apocalyptic.
There's a new Terminator movie coming out in a couple weeks that I think will give you the opposite perspective. Because that perspective is less common. I think the Star Trek optimistic perspective is less common. So it feels fresh when we see it, especially if it's been gone for so long.
Well, I mean, in some ways, I think it's harder to do. I mean, it's sort of easy to, you know, the world's been destroyed kind of thing.
Right.
And that has a sort of, I don't know, built-in gravitas, perhaps, that the more sunny vision, you know, maybe has a built-in naivete, or it just kind of seems, if it's too sunny, it seems very schmaltzy, or, you know, it doesn't work, so it has to be handled well. But, I mean, they handle it well.
Yeah, absolutely, and they do it very well in this new movie. Believe it or not, there are a couple other things coming out in theaters this week, although I'm just going to mention them quickly because I honestly don't recommend seeing either of these movies, especially in the face of Star Trek. But if you absolutely hate Star Trek, opening over at the Suncoast this week is a French movie called Paris 36, which is a sort of whimsical kind of toothless nostalgic look at Paris in the lead up to World War II. It's very rosy and predictable, and it's got some nice little musical numbers, but overall it's pretty flat. And Next Day Air, starring Donald Faison from Scrubs and Mike Epps, which is a really feeble sort of, I guess, urban version of like a Tarantino ripoff kind of thing. And it looks like a comedy, like a straight up comedy in the trailers. And they really mismarketed it, I think. It's not very funny as a comedy, but furthermore, it's far more dramatic and it's got all sorts of violence and big shoot 'em up sequences that really, again, it's just lifeless. It's got no style. It's not funny. It's not well written. And it's just sort of a sad imitation of the kind of movie that was being imitated like 10 plus years ago. So really don't go see either of those movies.
Go see Star Trek.
Go see Star Trek. And even compared to Blockbuster, like if you're going to wanted to see Wolverine or something, no, see Star Trek. That's the one. I think it's got a broad appeal and people will really enjoy it.
I think you're right.
So my thanks to T.R. Witcher for the geekiest podcast yet.
Thank you, Josh. Always a pleasure.
And for Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell.
Josh Bell hates everything.